We are into the final month of the 2016 high school football regular season, and only one of the teams that we cover is unbeaten. Two schools were off, the two smaller schools that were in action split, and only one of the big schools was a winner. Rough week for everybody as they finished with a 2-3 record. Plenty of teams, plenty of talent, and plenty of action. Brett Quinton with the C-Town Rivals podcast, where high school sports is always on the agenda. Ralph Amson and Chili join me this week, so reach out to us via Twitter. You know we will definitely tweet back. Visit us on ArizonaVarsity.com, fantastic website. And of course, give a like to our Facebook page. You'll love it. Let's start off with the Valley Christian Trojans. Jeff Rutledge's team comes up with their first win of the season. They blank ASU Prep 50-0. We haven't gone too much in detail about this team, but they're young. Running back Jake Orth, a junior, finds the end zone three times. Quarterback Peyton Hansel, a sophomore with a couple of TD passes, and a freshman QB Vinny Legata tosses a touchdown as well. This team has some pieces. Hopefully they're building for the long run. The 50 points scored were the most put up since October 25th, 2013, when they shut out Paradise Honors 73-0.
Yeah, and you're right. It's 2013, a weird season where they averaged 59 points in each win and 12 points in each loss. And you might see a little bit more of that this year because it's sort of unbalanced some of the competition that they're going to have to face. They still have Castile and Yuma Catholic. Those games aren't over yet. Valley Christian is actually on top of their section right now.
Yes, 1-0. Yeah, isn't that weird?
I think that Max Preps organizes it by margin of victory. And because of that, they're listed as being in first place. So it's a nice place to be at 1-5. Yes. At the top of the 3A Metro, which is another weird thing because it's Metro, but you're talking about teams in Queen Creek and right. Yuma, Chandler. North Point, I think, is in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming ASU Prep's in Tempe. I have no idea. But, you know, it's a really, really strange region with some teams they should dominate and some teams that they're probably going to struggle against. But as of right now, in this sudden death environment they've put themselves in, they're 1-0. Every week is playoffs for them. They'll have North Point coming up, and they can beat
yes,
North Point.
Absolutely.
Because North Point hasn't beat anyone besides Veritas Prep since 2010.
Correct. They're on a 14-game losing streak.
Yeah, so yeah, they won two games in the last six seasons, to which they didn't even feel the team. So I feel like they can probably get a win here. You don't want to look ahead too much, but they can probably get a win 2 weeks from now and go in at 3-5 to the two toughest games in their schedule. It was a little bit rough to see Elijah Gamage taking snaps at quarterback for Desert Vista as his five-game transfer suspension or whatever the AIA wants to call it is over. He would have been a big boost to this team, but they did get the win anyway, and you know they'll move forward without his services. But at the same time, you know, we've got to watch Elijah Gamage for 2 years, so you know we still kind of root for him to do well, root for every athlete to do well. But just as part of this podcast and the Chandler centric coverage he absolutely has, you know, one of the younger athletes to come out and make an impact at such a young age. So best of luck to him. Obviously, best of luck to Valley Christian in the upcoming week.
I'm absolutely fascinated that a team that starts off 0-5 can absolutely have a shot at the playoffs.
Yep.
Period. And the rest of their schedule is pretty light. Like Ralph said, you know, the next team that they play is winless. And on the whole, the four teams are like around 500. So I don't know. I'm really curious to see how this plays out for them.
Hopefully this is a team that certainly is starting to play their best football in the second half of the season. And indeed, those North Point Prep Falcons, they are 0-6. So this is a great chance for another W. The Seton Catholic Sentinels, three straight wins. They're coming off a bye week. They visit the 3-4 Tempe Buffaloes, a team that defeated them last season 16-12. Gary Gallant's club is 4-2 so far this season. And Ralph, little by little, they're inching towards that playoff bracket. Last week they were 19, this week they're 18.
Yeah, and they actually have a pretty good shot at making the playoffs. This whole Tempe thing is interesting because last year they lost in a game that Tempe absolutely needed to win to leapfrog like four other teams to get into the playoffs. It was a really bizarre situation where everyone that Tempe had played all got a win in the same week, and then Tempe got a win.
Oh, wow.
And it
okay.
boosted them into the playoffs. It was really, really cool the way it worked out. Not so great for Seton, but Seton really competed well in that game.
Mm-hmm.
The difference was really that Tempe made two-point
the conversions, right.
This whole rivalry between Seton Catholic and Tempe, and Seton doesn't really have a natural rival. They've played some great basketball games against McClintock that Chili and I have been to. But I think that's more like a student section rivalry. And they played some good basketball games against Tempe. I think Chili told me about a game he was at one time where Emmanuel Gant just, you know.
Oh, kinda.
Was that the kid who played quarterback for a while for Tempe? I remember him. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, they've got some basketball rivalries, and it's moving over into football as well, because this is going to be the 10th season in a row that they've played. They actually started this in 2007. You're never going to believe this, Brett, with Roger Shanks as head coach
of
Seton Catholic.
That's he used to coach Seton Catholic?
One for one season.
I didn't realize that. Wow. Okay.
Seton leads it 5-4 all time, and they can either extend that or get that tied up. I think it's a winnable game. Mm-hmm. What they have to worry about is running the ball, which they've been able to do a little bit. They only averaged 1.8 yards per carry in their matchup with Tempe last year. They also got to try to contain Mike King Johnson a little bit, who was maybe the best pass rusher in the state, certainly at the lower levels, because he had 6.5 sacks against Seton last year. You don't want that happening again. You also want to control your turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Seton's turned the ball over 10 times in 6 games. 8 of those have been interceptions. But Forest Sweet's also playing well and helping them get to the point where those interceptions don't matter much. The defense is helping because they've caused 8 fumbles and they have 3 interceptions. So the biggest thing for them is if it's going to be like last time, every single point matters. And I don't know what's going on with the kicking situation at Seton Catholic, but Michael Marks was 8-for-8 on mm-hmm. extra points, 2-for-2 on field goals. And then all of a sudden they switched to James Downey. I don't know if it was injury or what else is going on, but he's 4-of-6 on extra points and missed his only field goal attempt. And they didn't do any damage because ultimately they beat Coronado and they beat Coombs, but they wouldn't have to go into overtime against Coombs. I think
those teams
missed
that
extra point. So,
like you said, every point does count because they've had these overtime classics.
And Seton is not without their own sack specialist. Roman DeCaro has 6 sacks, but they all came against Moon Valley and Coronado. He had 3 in each game, so he's only about 6'1", 190. He's going to have to figure out whatever he was able to exploit against those other two teams and create some type of pressure to equal out the fact that Tempe's probably going to get a lot of pressure on Forest Sweet.
And Chili, I know you're big on the offense. Something you nicknamed the running backs at Seton Catholic.
Wade County.
It's
over
good
there
stuff.
In Chandler. Yeah, right there on Dobson and Ray. Enter Wade County. Man, Nick Wade is the truth. As long as he can get around Mike King Johnson, he could do a lot of damage. Also, the week off was probably good to help them heal up a little bit. I'm curious to see what Seton can bring to the table. I know Tempe's offense isn't, you know, really anything to, you know, scream at the top of your lungs about. So, you know, they kind of spread the ball out passing. They got like 5 receivers with like 1 or 2 touchdowns. I don't know. I think it's going to be the sophomore that starts at quarterback for them. So, you know, if Seton can take advantage on defense, make some plays, neutralize Mike King Johnson, who knows? Wade might be able to, you know, carry for about, you know, a buck and a half. So that's what I think.
And it's great to see these smaller schools really start to, it's tough to say rise up because, yes, Valley Christian still just has the one win, but figure a few weeks ago when you had an Ofer and a team that was 1-2, it's like, wow, now all of a sudden on that western side of Chandler, we're starting to see a lot more optimism for both Valley Christian and Seton Catholic, and we hope the momentum continues. Speaking of smaller schools going east, the Castile Colts. They made the trip to Yuma and were beaten soundly by the Yuma Catholic Shamrocks, 33-7. Clearly the best team they've played all year. Gunnar Cruz was picked off a couple of times, and the Colts' longest run all game was just 8 yards. Coach Stowers talks about the team's most recent contest. I'm here with head coach of the Castile Colts football team, Spencer Stowers. And Coach Stowers, first off, welcome to the Seatown Rivals podcast. Great to have you aboard. You guys took a tough one last Friday night in Yuma.
Kind of walk us through that game and what the atmosphere was like and ultimately the difference in the game.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely a – first of all, thanks for having me. Appreciate you coming over and shining some light on our program. UMass Catholic, we knew going into it would be our most physical game, toughest opponent. They're a state championship caliber team, great coaching staff. So we respect them and what they do. We just wanted to be the best football team we could be going into that. Our preparation all week was great. Looking back at that game, there were so many positive things just being a young team that we did. We were very physical up front. Defensively, we were fast to the ball. We made tackles on a lot of good football players. And no one pointed fingers. You know, when things went downhill in the fourth quarter, our kids stuck together, and we're going to make improvements on what happened. But the biggest thing was it was a lack of execution, and those are things we worked on all week this week. It's a 10-7 game at half, 17-7 game in the fourth quarter. We didn't even meet half of our goals on both sides of the ball, and for it to be a 17-7 game in the fourth, it says a lot about the types of players we have on this team, and we're going to get a lot better moving forward.
One of your, I'm going to say more talented players, you've obviously got a great bunch, only freshman and sophomore. That's also a testament to you guys as well. Gunnar Cruz, he's the guy who lines up under center. Tell us a little bit about him and how he's developed from last year to this year.
Well, he is the signal caller of our offense. There's a lot that goes into what we do offensively, and he kind of makes the ship run. So he puts guys in the position, and he needs to get the ball to the right spots depending on what the defense is doing. One of his greatest attributes is the fact he's very smart. He has a lot of composure, and he's a great teammate with his offensive players. They all look up to him. They respect him. He struggled a little bit last week. A lot of things were happening pretty fast. We know that moving forward, he's going to bounce back and be better this week than he ever was.
And how about the running back and the wide receiver kind of? How does it all gel?
Yeah, so our receivers and our running backs, they all really are universal, interchangeable. They can play a lot of different spots. But they're very young, and we have two freshmen that start for us in our receiving corps, Colin Gapin and Brant Goodwin. We lost Jamie Lewis early in the year. He's a 6'3 tight end that we have. But we've had guys that have stepped up. Zach Nielsen, who's a starter for us. And then Kaysen Simonton, who's working some X, and Cam Brown at receiver. But Mac Johnson has done a really nice job at running back, along with Kaysen, who also rotates in there as well. So a really solid group of young athletes, very talented, coachable kids that we love to work with every day.
You were over at Westwood High School in Mesa last year and even previous years. What was the draw to come out to Queen Creek and head up Castile High School? I'm guessing it might have been the fact that it's a startup.
You know, that was probably the biggest thing. I live right across the street from the school. I got young kids, and the opportunity to start a brand new program from scratch was the most enticing thing, not only for me but my staff as well. You know, I'm really nothing without my staff. My entire staff came over. I would not have taken a head job if they wouldn't have come with me, to be quite honest. So I respect all of my coaches and what they do on a daily basis for our kids. But all of us collectively said, hey, let's go start a program from scratch, something brand new to all of us that we've never been a part of. And definitely a change for us as coaches in terms of the demographics we coach in and the types of kids that we have. But we love all of the players we coach daily, the environment, and not only from a football standpoint, from a school standpoint, is like that championship environment that we just love. So that starts with our administration. They have allowed me to hire great coaches and work with our community and create a good booster club. And I think a lot of things have just fallen in place. So
that's the one thing that I do find with all of the CUSD schools. There does seem to be a family culture, like you mentioned, the booster clubs. A lot of the parents are involved. Tell us a little bit about the culture of the school and how that translates to the gridiron and within the locker room.
Well, right away, Sandy Lundberg, who is our principal, she set a tone that we're going to be uncommon, and in the sense that we want to be the best in all that we do, and we're going to find ways and different practices that allow for our kids to really excel at a high level, and it's something we strive for every day on campus. That trickles down into our athletic programs. Something that we do in our athletic program is we have a 12-month strength program. We lift in season. Our kids are lifting 3 days 3 days out of the week right now. Just over the course of our season, we've gained 117 pounds as a varsity team on top of what we're doing on the field. So it's not just about this year. We're really looking into the future of really trying to build a championship caliber program for our community. And again, it starts with the administrators, our teachers, who help our students in the classroom, and then, again, our parents and our community who do a great job helping us support our program.
You're back under the lights on Friday night against the Fountain Hills Falcons. What's the early scouting report against them? What do you guys need to do? Obviously play good football, but, of course, what do you have for them?
Our biggest thing is just execution. We have got to execute on offense, and then on defense. They got a really good running back at number three who's a senior who's actually leading our conference in rushing right now. They're a little bit of an underrated team. If you just look at their record outside in, they're a 2-4 team. They played a tough schedule, and they've competed in the halves with a lot of teams. So we are not looking past them. We respect what they do. They're a very physical team. So we have our hands full at home. And again, it's one play at a time and us executing on both sides of the ball. And if we do that, I believe we have a good chance to win the football game.
This isn't the first time we'll speak to the Castile Colts. And Coach Stowers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Ralph, we collectively talked about the atmosphere and how it was going to be down there in Yuma. They're 5-1 now. Despite the loss, clearly a lot of good things going on over at Castile.
Absolutely. I think, to me, they ran into a buzzsaw. Yuma Catholic has had the best 3 consecutive weeks of any team in the state because you have to put them on the level that they play on. And what Yuma Catholic has done is they've gone on the road to beat River Valley. They've gone on the road to beat Northwest Christian. Their defense was lights out in both games. Mm-hmm. And then they host Castile and I think took the first punch. If I'm not mistaken,
yes.
Castile took an early lead.
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm. In that game.
It was just 10-7 at half.
Yeah. And so, but then when you start to have drives interrupted, you don't really know how to rebound from that if you've never had to do it before. So kudos to Yuma Catholic for turning it on defensively. They're going to be a team to look out for. I mean, I think they're still ranked below Castile in the overall rankings, a few spots below them. Castile actually dropped like 8 spots or something.
They're 11 now. Yeah.
But I think Yuma's still barely in the playoff picture. It's a loaded 3A, but you know, Yuma Catholic went from having a couple of rough weeks to absolutely dominating. And so it's not something really to be ashamed of. I think it will cool the magical championship talk, you know, that everyone's talking about. Mm-hmm. But the upcoming schedule it's not terrible.
No.
And the way the AIA Max Preps formula works is the better a team that you've lost to plays,
the more points you get.
Yeah, the more it helps you. And it's almost backwards. Like if you look at the 6A rankings, Hamilton for 2 weeks in a row has been above Desert Ridge, who blew them out.
Mm-hmm.
You get more credit almost for losing to a good team than the team gets for being that good team, especially
yes.
if they've played weaker competition. So you're going to see teams get absolutely screwed over in this system because it doesn't take the most important thing into account, which is a head-to-head matchup.
Correct.
That should always be the number one thing. But if Castile can win out, they can be 9-1, and then they can carry the weight of just showing up in Yuma, you know, that can put them in a situation where they're maybe able to climb back into a home playoff.
Right, yeah.
You were out there. What do you think of the place?
It's gorgeous. It's just very serene, quiet. I like how the practice was run, just very organized. Not a lot of screaming in your face. It was actually more constructive instruction, meaning this is how we do it. This is how it has to get done. And the youngsters listen. They fall right into place. So I think Coach Stowers has a great coaching staff. And as he mentioned, he took them all from Westwood. It was one of those things where he wasn't 100% sure he wanted this Castile job if he didn't have the support from the people that he worked with. So now they're all over there building something. And I think they have a lot of things going on. You figure the numbers are only going to get bigger because right now they're capped at sophomores. So in 2 years, you've got seniors. And Chili, I know you've liked the model of 7-12, and that's going to pay big dividends for them.
I think that the more that we were talking about it last week, you were bringing up, you know, having like your own minor league system within the system. Yeah, I think that works. You know, it's amazing the situation that they got going on and the way they get to grow, similarly to the way I remember Desert Vista was able to grow. I think, you know, if they were going to lose a game, this is an ideal game to lose. It's kind of smack dab close to the middle of the schedule. It brings them down a little bit so that they can build back up in time for the playoffs. I think that that is what's really key. And hearing what you have to say about the way that they're coached, I think that it's going to be more beneficial to lose now than lose later, not know what to fix necessarily, and have the wheels all fall off all at once. I don't think that that's going to happen with Castile. I think, you know, they'll rebound nicely, get a couple more wins under their belt, and, you know, maybe win one in the playoffs, whether on the road or at home.
Sure. And up next is a home game against Fountain Hills, and the Falcons check in at 2-4. The Basher Bears, they fall to the Chandler Wolves for the sixth consecutive time. It was another high-scoring affair between these two schools, as expected. And in the end, it's the Wolves 59, the Bears 37. Ryan Kelly continues to get his yards in the air with 333. Terrell Brown, Chili, how good is he with 200-plus yards?
Terrell Brown is an absolute monster as long as Kelly's taking the snaps at quarterback. You know, me and Ralph went out to a game to kind of watch, hoping to see a battle of receptions between him and Cade Warner earlier this season, but we didn't get that. We were kind of robbed of that opportunity because Kelly was injured or whatever. That connection that they have, it's almost like, what is it, telepathic? Is that the right word? I don't want to say the wrong words.
No,
it's like
Ryan, they read each other well, sure.
Ryan Kelly already knows where Terrell is. And it's got to be so easy because Terrell's like long and like
he's a big target. You know,
what is he, like 6'3", 6'4", or something like that? And like with his wingspan, he's probably like 8'11" or something like that. But, you know, in the end, overall talent is going to win out. Chandler is so loaded at so many different
positions. Yeah, I was going to say, talk to me about the offense from the other team. We know what Basha brought and can bring, but what's Chandler got going on?
Real quick, I got to finish with, you know, I honestly, not that I'm disappointed or whatever, I did expect to see maybe a little bit more out of the Goodman boys. I kind of wanted, I kind of thought that I would see 100 yards on the ground from the one and then 100, you know, receiving
Deshaun
from the other.
Deshaun and Jalen,
Just because they're that good, and I know that they can keep up with these Chandler boys. But man, like you said, Chandler absolutely just punches you in the mouth with the weapons that they have. Mainly TJ Green, 4 touchdowns, big game for him. Almost 200 yards rushing alone. And then Gunnar Romney, man, 100 yards receiving, a touchdown. Like, this Chandler team has so many weapons all over the field. I think that they are done with their, you know, centennial hangover. And, you know, they're ready to put it back together.
Now, Ralph, I will ask you, what do you make of this Chandler Wolves team? Because I'm still kind of puzzled in a sense of, well, you guys were at a game in which they scored only 7 and gave up 52. Chili, you were at another game and saw them give up 56. I saw them shut out Pinnacle in the second half, but we know that Pinnacle's not as good as advertised. Ralph, what's your take of this whole mix, but yet we're talking about a team that scored 173 points in their last 3 games?
They're young. They've had the benefit of a upperclassman, either junior or senior starting quarterback, for a very long time. In my memory, this is the youngest quarterback they've ever started. I think when I was in high school, our quarterback got a couple of snaps on varsity as a sophomore, but, you know, wasn't starting. So this is a situation where they had a couple of seniors and they decided to go with the sophomore, and you're going to take sort of some inconsistency on offense from that. And then defensively, they're just young. They're just a lot younger than they've been. They've still got the numbers. They've still got a lot of talent. It's sort of an interesting situation where there's been some coaching changes ever since Thurman Moore went to Brophy, who had, you know, this season seems to have had his message really take hold with them.
Right, yes, this is where it caught up to them. Yep.
Right, but at the same time, I think it's just a matter of youth out at Chandler and understanding that defense has never been the
Wolves'
strong suit out there. they've always made some adjustments that include putting a talented player or somebody who has edge rushing capabilities that isn't necessarily an edge rusher into their defensive scheme to get pressure. They did it with J.R. Hunt moving him from safety to outside linebacker. They did it with Deontay Sykes moving him from a large wide receiver out to like a strong safety rushing linebacker. They had Hamilcar Rashad transfer in, obviously had double-digit sacks for them and created a lot of havoc in the backfield. I don't think they have that this year. I mean, I could even see them now that it's later in the season maybe moving somebody who is strong and fast, not necessarily big, into a position to do something like that. Like maybe even a Johnny Johnson. Who knows what they have planned. They're very notorious for making adjustments to personnel late in the season. But they just don't have some of the same elements that they've had in recent years. But even then, defense was never really the thing.
That's true.
With Chandler, you know, it's always sort of been an offensive-minded school with a lot of athletes, and they want to outscore you. It's hard to have, like, one or two successful seasons and then all of a sudden just have that be the mindset that you're true. Tough-nosed defensively, you know. And a lot of it came from some transfers. J.W. Windsor came in at the defensive tackle position. Okay. You know, they've had K.T. Tallini starting for, like, 3 years, and all of a sudden his leadership is gone. He was a captain.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just a young, different defense, and I think they're feeling the effects of that.
And, you know, kind of building off of what Ralph said, I'm really, really curious to see what evolves with Johnny Johnson. He had some big, big games in the first four games, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the last two games has kind of been somewhat quiet until the most recent one, obviously. He only had like 48 yards receiving or whatever. But I'm really curious also with the Rocket, Ryan Johnson, what's going on with him. And I know that he was a little bit injured after the Centennial game. But in that Centennial game, he had like 130 yards rushing. He had like 130 yards. Yeah. And he made an impact. Speed kills. We all know that. You know, I just want to see what's next for Johnny Johnson. Johnny Yams. I know, you know, super talented kid. Can do a variety of things. So I'm curious. I thought I remember Ralph saying last week that they might try to use him as like a spy linebacker or something like that to edge rush Kelly. And, you know, I'm curious to see like if they try to maximize his talents that way. And Ryan Johnson, man, like that kid's fast.
Yes.
Like,
now I'll say I'm not big on predictions. So what are the keys to the game on Friday night, Chandler at Perry? Both schools have a lot of athletes. Chandler probably has a little bit more experience in these types of games and with the overall athleticism. But like we mentioned, does Perry just not know what they're getting into and play lights out? Or just what might we see, what might we not see?
First of all, Chandler's going to get some offensively. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
TJ Green has been a monster the last three games. And the last every game that he's played in ever since, you know, having to jump into more of a starting role last year, you're not going to box that guy in. You're not going to shut him down. So pick and choose your battles, I guess. If you don't want Conover to beat you, focus all your energy on the running game. But if Ryan Johnson's healthy, then they have the ability to switch it up stylistically a little bit. Big receivers are probably going to give Perry secondary trouble. So, you know, you look for Gunnar Romney to possibly have a big game. Chandler is going to probably put at least 35 to 42 up on Perry. The big thing for Perry is they've been able to come out and absolutely blow the door. They remind me of University of Colorado. Come out with a great game plan, just bop, 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 score like three touchdowns right away. And by the time you've caught your breath,
right,
even having the ability to realize what the hell just happened, you're down 21-10. Like,
that's right, yeah.
And that's what Perry's been able to do well. So the key for me is Perry has to score early because they could be like Castile and run into a situation where they don't necessarily know how to play from behind.
Okay, yeah.
The other thing for me that's going to be super important is Perry's going to have somebody be a star besides the people who have been.
Agreed.
Because the James brothers, you know, they're averaging 18 yards per catch combined. They've been great. But in the running game, they got five players with at least 28 carries. And Kenny Foltz leads with 43, and I think he even missed a game. And so,
correct.
Maybe Foltz is that guy that breaks out, but you can't just have it be the Purdy show. I know he's had a really, really great couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be what Chandler focuses on. So, you know, if they're going to worry about one player, it's going to be probably trying to shut down the dual threat element of Purdy and make him beat them over the top, which he might very well do. The one place where I feel like Perry has a huge advantage is Chandler always struggles in special teams. Christian Zendejas has had an absolute year right now. 28 for 28 on extra points. Hasn't missed a field goal yet. 25% of his kickoffs go for touchbacks, so you eliminate a little bit of a threat there. Score, kick the ball into the end zone.
Make some sound defense.
Make best you can. And Chandler's going to commit some penalties, too.
Yes.
Make Chandler commit some penalties, and that's how they win this game. It is not out of the question that Perry could get the win here. AIA Max Preps thinks this is a 3-7 matchup in favor of Perry. I don't necessarily like Perry to win this game, but you have to admit to yourself, if you're Chandler, that it's possible, because if you don't confront that reality, the first time that you actually confront it is going to be when you're looking at it on the scoreboard.
Right.
And that scoreboard is going to be lit up. It's going to be sponsored by SRP lit up. I'm thinking that the over-under got to be like 92.5.
You know what's funny? I had 93 in my head.
I just say 92.5 just because I don't want to break even with anybody. I see the James boys getting in the end zone a healthy amount, 3-4 times total. You know, I see TJ Green, like Ralph said, doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
If Ryan Johnson's available, I know that he is just ready to take off. That there's a lot of ways to say goodbye. In Chandler, they say Ryan Johnson, and he is gone. I'll
say I'm looking forward to seeing Ryan Johnson play, because he didn't play in the game that I saw them play against Pinnacle.
I don't want to bet on Perry yet, just because of how they did me last year. But man, it is.
And
tough,
I mean, we're sticking at least
against them right now.
Right. It's for me. I have to stick to the guns of until they beat one of the big boys, Brophy, Hamilton, or Chandler. I'm not sure if they can do it yet. Now, next week this time, we might be like, wow, look at what Perry did. Or we may say, hey, all right, Perry's got to face Brophy. So we'll see. But yeah, either way, I think we're in for a very entertaining scoreboard lit up type of game. A lot of details, like you mentioned, as far as just the kickoff intangible. So yeah, this is going to be a fun one to watch.
What's weird is everybody in the state's going to be a Chandler fan.
Yeah.
Like, they have to be, because
right.
Brophy needs Chandler to win.
That's right.
Mountain Point needs Chandler to win. Hamilton needs Chandler to win.
That's
like,
true.
They all need it because of how goofy this playoff system is.
Definitely.
That Chandler winning will help out every team.
That's
immediately,
right.
Especially Mountain Point.
Right.
Who
yes.
has lost the number one overall spot to Brophy. And for Hamilton and for Brophy, it will ultimately probably even out.
But in the immediacy, if
you're worried about points, you're in a situation where Perry could probably lose to Chandler, still be ranked above Chandler next week, but Mountain Point could get the kick
and
jump Brophy
to number one.
And this whole thing is just super weird to me. That's why I like our poll. But I think you have to have some type of human element in it. So if you're just the casual observer, you know, and you're probably rooting for Chandler just to help your squad out a little bit, just because the teams that Perry have played, some of them aren't even in the playoff picture, and the ones that are kind of on the periphery. Corona's 16, but Cesar Chavez is going to take that spot, so they're not technically a playoff team. Highlands 2-4, who knows how much longer they'll last. I think that everyone's going to be rooting for Chandler. I'm picking Chandler. So if you go to Perry and you're listening to this right now, like, use that. You were going to be the underdog anyway, but we're talking about you like you have a chance.
Right.
So make the most of it.
It's going to be it'll be fun stuff. As for the Basher Bears, they head to 7-0 Brophy on Friday. Those two teams met in a thriller last year in Southeast Chandler, with the Broncos winning in overtime 49-42. Speaking of the Brophy Broncos, they stuck it to the Hamilton Huskies 44-21 last week. This one was just ugly from start to finish. Brophy got the ball first. Opening drive was 80 yards. Well executed and took 5.5 minutes off the clock. Next series, a pick six thrown by Tyler Shupp was returned 29 yards for a score, and the Broncos were in control the rest of the way. Ralph, 6 turnovers by Hamilton, and you aren't going to win, especially against a disciplined Brophy team. You just, they don't beat themselves.
That's what you told me. They don't beat themselves. Chandler is, you know, it's a city that is supposed to just deal Brophy losses.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously did not happen out at Phoenix College. So, and what I was told by a couple of players on Hamilton was that the quarterback running back exchange was off. You had told me that the momentum swings were just absurd. That every time that Hamilton would take a step forward, they'd do something that make it look like they took 2 steps back.
Correct.
Brophy's going to make you beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. Even the guys who came in, you know, Brophy has a corner who came in with 4 interceptions. I checked to see if, you know, they were beat by one of the stars that was performing. No, that wasn't him. Like, all 4 fumbles were recovered by 4 different guys.
That's right.
Interceptions were both the same kid, but at the same time,
yep, Marcus White, yep.
Everybody is, they just take advantage of the mistakes you make. I was told their defensive line wasn't getting a huge push, but then Hamilton was surprised by the fact the linebackers would come in and just smack people. So, like that. The soft exterior with the hard interior surprising right. people. So I don't really know what to say here. We're living in a time where Hamilton got blown out twice in the regular season, where the Cleveland Cavaliers have a championship, where the Chicago Cubs might win one, and Donald Trump might be president.
That's right.
Think the world is upside down. So, I guess if you're an unlucky person, go out and buy a lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. And if you're a lucky person, move into a storm shelter, because, you know, everything's upside down. I don't know how Hamilton's going to rebound from 2 big losses like that and coming out of last season getting blown up by Centennial in the last half of a
last quarter
playoff game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one of those people that's going to say an era is over, but we're definitely probably in some overlapping eras of a new one if Hamilton can't right the ship and do well on the road.
I'm beginning to think that Hamilton hasn't really fully recovered from the Centennial situation. That's number one. Number two, we are living in an interesting time, especially regarding high school football, where a Hamilton team is beating everybody that they're supposed to beat. But for the first time, that's not everybody on their schedule, because they're losing games to Desert Ridge, Brophy, and it's very possible they might lose to Chandler and or Perry. When's the last time we thought that we'd see Hamilton with maybe 4 losses?
Right. No, that's big. You're right.
In the regular season. In the regular season.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if they've ever had 4 losses in a regular in a season.
Correct.
Let alone, you know, just the first part of it. Which, you know, puts postseason play in jeopardy. I mean, it's got to. Has Hamilton
maybe
ever
postseason home game, but
yeah, I mean,
there's
be
not a lot of good teams in the highest division this year, so they'll get in on power points.
Even if they lose to the top 4 teams on their schedule,
yeah,
would you
yeah
still
because
care
I mean, you got to realize of the top 6 teams right now, Hamilton has played 3 of them,
and yeah,
Skyline, and like, Desert Ridge, and Brophy.
Right, so now I think Highlands number 14, and
yes,
they're 2-4. So
mm-hmm,
there's just not enough good teams to keep Hamilton out, even if everybody was
wow
winning. Which, if you're mm-hmm, if you're a team like Perry or Chandler or Hamilton, you celebrate. You've basically already made the playoffs,
right?
And because
yes
of the way the formula works. Again, it comes up because of the way the formula works. Losses can't really hurt you at this point.
Correct. Yeah.
So if you've already built up some wins, you're fine.
You're in. Yeah. It's just a matter of jockeying for playoff seeding at this
yes
point. I mean,
and Bash is going to benefit even if
yes
they lose.
That's
Bash
right
is going to benefit from playing these teams.
Yes, I mean, it's weird. A 3-7 Bash team could get in
just based solely on.
I mean, now they do have to win a game. I mean, they're going to have to beat one of the somebody on their upcoming schedule. I don't know if that happens. Yeah, like I said, I'm not sure if that happens.
It's tough for them right now.
But yeah, no one in the premier region is out. So yeah, it's now Hamilton's off this week. They hadn't given up that many points since falling at home to Chandler 56-24 back on October 2, 2014. Well, fellas, I will tell you, this has been, as always, enlightening. I think we're looking at some good and entertaining football. Some good games have been played, some even better ones to come in the sectional play and ultimately into the postseason. Ralph Amsden, Chili, Rhett Quintine, Seatown Rivals, we're out.